Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Creative Differences Podcast, the podcast where we put out new episodes whenever we feel like it. But, you know, maybe one day we'll have more consistency.
We were very consistent from like quarantine up until like last year. So,
yeah, it's the relaxed times. Everybody needs to relax a little bit. That's where we're at.
Also, we got jobs.
We got jobs. It's tough to force this hobby into our jobs. Also, my name is Dallas, in case you didn't know. And I think we need to bring Thick Moms back to Pixar movies.
Good Lord. I'm Demi. And I was out until 2:30 in the morning last night, so I'm a little tired, but I'm here, guys.
We love that for you, having a fun time.
Yeah, it's part of girlhood, you know? Which is also a theme of today's episode. Welcome to the Creative Differences Podcast. Your one-stop shop for movie reviews, Fancast Fridays, Throwback Thursdays, and a number of other other pop culture related items. I struggled through that. You can tell I'm really tired.
Today.
I was like, wait, what do I usually? It's also been a minute. I haven't been here for like a month.
It's been a minute, yeah.
All right, guys. Today we are reviewing Supergirl, Toy Story 5, and The Legend of Vox Machina Season 4.
Yes, 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 yes. It is another Double D's podcast. As you know, you didn't hear Cassie, you didn't hear Gabby. Cassie said, and I quote, "Forget y'all and your little podcast." So she's not here. And Gabby said she did her one episode for the season, so don't expect any more.
Crazy work.
So here we are.
She'll be back for the year beginning episodes next year, 2027. Look out.
We get like a couple a year out of Gabby.
Boom. You
know, it'd be like that. Before we get into all this fun stuff, please like and subscribe and share. And I guess there's like a hype button now on YouTube. I don't really know how it works, but it sounds helpful. So if you see that, click that and tell me what it does. Because I need to spread my Pixar agenda to more people and hope that it can get to John Pixar or whoever's in charge over there now.
All right, let's start it off. Supergirl.
Supergirl. Supergirl is directed by Craig Gillespie. He made Fright Night. He made I, Tonya. He made Cruella. And he made Mr. Woodcock, which I always forget about because it came out so long ago. And that was before I cared who directed anything. It's written by Anna Noguera. So she hasn't written a whole lot. She is an actress and a playwright. She's written a couple of plays, including one called Which Way to the Stage. And she wrote a film called Never Here. Yeah, she doesn't have a lot of feature writing credits. But now she's writing this. And currently the plan is that she's writing Teen Titans and Wonder Woman. So she is jumping in with both feet. Shout out, Anna. Movie stars, Millie Alcock, Matthias Schoenaerts, E. Ridley, David Krumholtz, Emily Beecham, David Corenswet, and Jason Momoa in the role he was born to play as Lobo. And it is based on Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow by Tom King and Bilky Evely, which is why the planet they go to is called Bilky.
Also, shout out to their colorist. I believe his name is Matthias Lopez.
Okay.
I might look that up later, but I feel like he also deserves a lot more credit because the color work on that comic is extraordinary.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of it. I'm like, that's some good colors. Oh, IMDb summary. Kara Zor-El, a.k.a. Supergirl, joins forces with an unlikely companion on an interstellar journey of vengeance and justice when an unexpected adversary strikes too close to home. Yeah.
Real. That's the movie.
So, initial thoughts. As Robin from Young Justice would say, I was whelmed. I was not too overwhelmed. I was not too underwhelmed. I was whelmed. I feel like the movie is very okay. I don't have a lot of complaints. I don't have a lot of like congrats, but not bad.
I liked the movie. I really was hoping to get hit a lot more in the feels.
Mm-hmm.
As somebody who loves the comic, it's one of my all-time favorite comics. In fact, it has made me cry both times that I have read it.
Right.
But I think it's solid. Like, I think it's a fun space adventure. There are some things that I'm like, I wish you had gone a little more with the comic on this one instead of veering away. But we can get into that.
Speaking of the source material, I do want to say, yes, you are correct. Matt Lopez, he's often credited as Matt Lopez, I guess, is the colorist for Woman of Tomorrow.
Yeah. Color work is stunning.
Yeah.
But about the movie, I really liked the production design. I liked the look of all the planets. I liked the sort of very practical, gritty look, like very Star Wars-esque type of look. Also, I've seen people compare some of it to like Mad Max. I get that feeling as well.
Okay, I've seen that.
Yeah, just of like how things look in the movie. I liked the lighting in the movie as well, the cinematography. There are shadows in this movie. There are rarely ever shadows in movies anymore, guys. So that makes me really happy. I love the usage of like LED lights as well in like so many places where you probably would not expect there to be LED lights. But it made it look really cool, really good. It brought the color from the comic books at least into the movie in some capacity, which I really appreciated. Okay. The scenes in space looked awesome. Like the scene where she goes into space and just like is screaming, just like I loved the way that like I loved everything in space. I loved the way that all looked, including like her flying scenes. Her flying scenes were dope. Her aura farming was crazy at times when she would just like fly and just stop in the air and just kind of like look around. I was like, this looks so cool. She looks so cool. She's so cool. The biggest compliment I have about this movie is that Millie Alcock is amazing as Supergirl. She's it. That's my Supergirl. Like I recognize that girl from the comic. That's the Kara from the comics that helped me navigate through grief. The way she carries the weight of Kara's grief and her snark and her caring and like the kind heart that Kara has. Like she doesn't have to say that she's sad in every scene. You can see it in the way that Millie carries herself as Kara, that there is something going on and with this woman. Like there is something behind those eyes, this like incredible sadness that she cannot pass, that she cannot get over. And I really, really loved her performance in this movie. Like I so look forward to seeing more of this character as we move forward, because I think Millie does a great job playing her, and I think the character is a really fun character, and I like that they've very much differentiated her from Superman.
Yeah, very, very different from Superman.
Yeah, they are not just the same person, and I think that just makes their dynamic more fun, is how different they are.
Yeah, there's a nice contrast there, and I do like that we get the more serious moments, because it could easily be, and for me toward the beginning, it kind of was just like, I know the character with the tragic backstory who runs from it with like getting drunk and fighting and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I knew that wasn't going to be just what we get because I've heard of this story and I know what it is. So I was like, glad to see that toward the middle. Like when she actually starts to talk to Ruthie about what happened, I'm like, okay, cool. This is more of what I wanted. Speaking of what I wanted, Jason Momoa is finally playing Lobo and it makes me so happy.
He's very good in this movie.
He was having the time of his life. And I didn't want him to take over too much of the movie because it's not his movie. And you don't want Supergirl's movie to be taken over by this dude. But whenever he was on screen, I had so much more fun. And Kayla pointed out when he's in the scene in the cages with Ruthie that he has Beetlejuice energy.
Oh my goodness.
Like when she's like, you know, trying to be very violent. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah, proud of you. I was like, he's Space Beetlejuice, and I love it.
He does a really good job. I'm also very happy that he's not in much of the movie because that is a big change from, I mean, there's a lot of big changes from the comics, to be fair. The comic almost feels like a director's cut of what you get in this movie. These are just like other side quests that they probably took on the journey.
Right.
I really like that he wasn't in it too much, but he was in it just enough to like really grasp onto who the character is and like to enjoy his time on screen while he's there and to, you know, just be really cool.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed the whole cast, if I'm honest. I really loved Eve Ridley. I think she did a great job playing Ruthie. I also really enjoyed watching her and Millie Alcock act off of each other. I thought they were really good together, especially in the more somber scenes when we're going into like the grief that both of them are carrying together. Matthias Schoenaert playing Krem of the Yellow Hills makes this character a lot more disgusting than he is in the comic book, I will say.
It's kind of a gross movie, which is interesting because I don't get that a lot from what I've seen of Craig Gillespie's work. I get it from a lot of James Gunn work, which makes sense. But I was like, oh, this movie's grosser than I thought it would be.
Like, the character is an atrocious character in the comic, and that kind of remains in this film. More of a passive villain as well, because that comic is mostly a journey of Kara and Ruthie trying to catch him, and every single time they get to a new planet, they've just missed him. Unlike in the movie, where every time they see him, they do have some sort of interaction with him. So he's far more active in this movie than he is in the comic. But yeah, he's really gross in this movie. Like, there were moments in this movie where I was just like, why are you like this?
I did like that he was always eating something.
Like, yes,
the first
he was.
Scene we get introduced to him, he's like, oh, y'all got pie in there? Let me get some of that pie. And then,
he goes into Kara's ship and steals her cereal.
Right. Even, when we get the inciting incident of the movie, which we see in the trailers, what happens to Crypto, he's eating cereal while he does it. And I was like, bro, why are you always eating?
You got something to eat up in there? We hungry.
It's part of the grossness, actually.
Oh, you got cereal? Let me finish that for you.
I also really enjoyed some of the action sequences. I really enjoyed what Supergirl looks like in action. She looks really cool. I like the way she fights. It's not like, oh, I'm just using brute strength to do it. I do actually have some sort of fighting skill. There is a little bit of hair whipping going on that I think is really fun. She's not hitting people with her hair, but it's just a matter of, she'll be fighting, and then, when she has to turn her head, her hair just whips around. And I'm like, I love hairography. I think hairography is great. It's cool. It should be everywhere. And then, the final battle sequence that she... Yo, she's killing it. I love that sequence. She looks so cool and so amazing. Okay, at times I did find the editing to be a little choppy. Also, there are three scenes from the comics that I think really would have emotionally hit. There's the hand washing scene in the comic, which is where Supergirl teaches Ruthie how to wash her hands. It's a very small, intimate moment. There's a scene in the comic where Supergirl and Ruthie witness the aftermath of an atrocity. Ruthie says to Supergirl, "It's too big, we're too small." And she starts crying, and Supergirl just hugs her through the grief of it all. It's such a really good moment of the cruelty of the world, the cruelty of the galaxy, of the universe is too much for any one person to bear.
Right.
The final scene is Ruthie's monologue, which I have read on this podcast when I think Millie Alcock first got cast. But Ruthie's monologue about Supergirl at the end of the comic, I think those three scenes would have just really bumped this movie up. But I also, watching the movie, I really enjoyed the Krypton scenes. Those are some of my favorite scenes from the comic. I thought those scenes were great in the movie. I loved watching Millie and David and Emily play the Zor-El family.
Yeah, Zor-El, right? That's the last name.
Yeah,
or his name.
Yeah,
is
she's
Zor-El?
She's Kara Zor-El. Her dad, yeah, and her dad is Zor-El. So
okay, so I think it's all L.
Yeah,
I don't know how the names work.
I don't know.
I did like that. It was cool to get some added, backstory for lack of a better term, but seeing that contrast to when we got Superman last year. And all we really know is his parents were wilding. So now it's okay, Krypton isn't just a planet of alien fascists.
Yeah, thank goodness. That's typically how, the world works. Not everybody. Yeah. We don't typically do the invincible thing out here. It's not typically how planets work.
Yeah.
Not everybody on Earth is a fascist. Yeah, I really liked those scenes. I loved the scenes with Superman. I really loved watching Millie Alcock and David Corenswet interact. I'm really looking forward to the future of those two interacting. I really want more of the Super Cousins together because they were really good in every scene that they had together.
Those were really good. I hope we get more of that going forward.
I know that she's in Man of Tomorrow, so that really excites me. So I'm like, yes, cool. There will be more of that. And not only will there be more of that, it will be next year, so I don't have to wait too long for that to happen.
Right.
But yeah, I had fun. There are a lot of things that I really enjoy about this movie. I just thought it was going to hit me a little harder, which was the disappointment, but I enjoyed it. I think it's just a fun movie. It's a solid movie, and I look forward to seeing this character more. It excited me for the future of the DCU, which is I think is very important at this stage.
It is interesting because it is a movie that I don't think really affects my expectations for the DCU just because of what we've heard of them doing. It's so spread out. We have the Lanterns over here, and then we have Clayface over here, and we know we're going to get Wonder Woman and Teen Titans and Batman. So it's I see a lot of people being oh my God, the DCU is cooked. What are we going to do? And it's guys, relax. If you didn't love this movie, that doesn't mean you need to worry about the entire future. But then of course there are people who wanted it to fail as soon as James Gunn took over.
Yeah.
So we have to navigate through all that too.
I think that's weird too, because like there's no way everybody loves every movie in the MCU. Like, it's not possible.
Yeah, like, y'all don't forget what a lot of the first couple phases of MCU were. Nobody really rocked with Captain America until Winter Soldier came out.
I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah, this movie feels like it's more on par with like some of the phase one movies of the MCU. And that's not a bad thing.
Right. Like, they started with Iron Man. It was like, oh, this is fire. They gave us a couple that weren't as fire.
And then, but we're good.
Yeah, we're good. We had a good time.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. I feel like the way that the DCU is panning out to be, with so many different things involved, like, mm-hmm. I think that's an exciting prospect of like, sure, maybe yeah. Supergirl wasn't for you, but like, mm-hmm. you might end up loving Lanterns. Also, Supergirl's right. a very different movie from Superman. And I think that's yeah. a good thing, because I think that speaks to what the rest of the DCU could be. Clayface looks nothing like anything right. that we've seen in both of those movies. Lanterns like, doesn't look anything like either of these movies either. So I think that's like really good. And I think as long as like maybe the project itself doesn't invigorate you, but mm-hmm. if the characters do, if you like what you saw of the character and you're excited to see them in the future, then I think that's a good thing too.
Yeah, because even if I loved this movie, or even if I hated this movie, which it's neither for me, it wouldn't make me feel differently about the body horror movie we're going to get later, or the True Detective Lanterns hop, like, series we're going to get. It's like, yeah, this was their space buddy navigating through grief movie. It doesn't make me worried about how I'm going to feel about the other stuff that's nothing like this.
Well, final thoughts. I enjoyed the movie. I like it. Yeah. I plan to go see it again in theaters. Also, okay, cool. I thought it was really good to see in IMAX, because I liked seeing some of the wider aspect ratio for some of those space shots and for some of the action as well.
It is one of the things that works really well in IMAX. When you have a shot of Kara in space flying toward the sun, or like getting out her emotions, like, you see the vastness of space better in IMAX. I will say, CityWalk, y'all put too many seats in that theater. There's no reason my knees should be up against the back of somebody's seat in the freaking IMAX theater. I try to walk through people to get to my seat, and I'm knee tapping people. But that's not really relevant to Supergirl. That's just
that's nothing to do with the movie itself.
No, that's more of a CityWalk problem.
I liked it. On Letterboxd, I gave it like a 3.5 out of 5. I think you gave it a 3.
Yeah, it's a 3 for me. Lobo almost pushed it to a 3.5. But like I said, not his movie.
Not going to lie, Supergirl's aura almost pushed it to a 4 for me.
Yeah, sometimes the last half of Star is just like, there's something that you get out of it that you like. But yeah.
It's really interesting, because sometimes I think the Letterboxd star rating system isn't like, it's not good enough. Because I'll come to a point where I'm like, Supergirl isn't a 3.5, but it is also not a 4. So what do I do here?
You think it'd be better if it was like out of 10?
No, I think I would still be a little conflicted. Well, actually, maybe not. I think if we did it out of 10, I might give it like a 7.
I think if we get out of 10, but like with 0.5s, so where they have like half stars.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of movies where I'm like, if I would give it like a 7.5, is that closer to, like, for me, that's like 3.5 stars, but it also could be like a 4, depending on the movie.
Yeah.
But
it's somewhere in the middle right there. Mm. Yeah. I'd give it a 7.
Right, which makes sense, because you give it a 3.5, so.
Yeah.
Times 2, that's 7.
Yeah, yeah. That's how math works.
Math.
All right, moving on to Toy Story.
Toy Story 5 is directed by Andrew Stanton. He is a Pixar mainstay. He co-directed A Bug's Life. He directed WALL-E. He directed Finding Nemo, and he directed Finding Dory. And is written by Andrew Stanton and Kenna Harris. I wasn't familiar with Kenna Harris, but they have worked on various Disney projects. This appears to be their first feature writing credit, but they wrote and directed the short film A Child Alberto, which is a Luca short film.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. So, shout out Kenna. This is a good way to start. I like Toy Story 5. Spoiler alert. It stars Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Joan Cusack, Conan O'Brien, Scarlett Spears, Greta Lee, Shelby Rabara, Michael Michelle Harris, and Craig Robinson. And the IMDb summary is, Woody, Buzz, Jesse, and the rest of the gang's jobs are challenged when they're introduced to electronics, a new threat to playtime. Yeah, fair. There's more going on, but it's a good surface level read of it.
Yeah, it's a broad read. What'd you think?
I like this movie so much more than I expected to. And that's the weird thing, because I've never disliked a Toy Story movie. But I don't need to get too deep into it just in the initial thought section. But I would say I liked it a lot. That's what my initial thoughts. Very much liked it.
Yeah, I loved this movie. I had a great time in the theater. I am a huge Toy Story fan. If you've seen my Pixar Letterboxd ranking, the first four Toy Stories are basically my entire top five. The only thing in there that's cutting it is The Incredibles, because The Incredibles is incredible.
It is.
So yeah, so I really loved this movie. I was really glad with how good it came out to be, because I am a Toy Story 4 defender. Because everybody's always like, why'd they make another one? Toy Story 3 ended it perfectly. And I'm like, okay, but it's a good movie. So like, so what, you want us to not have another great movie just because the last one had a good ending?
And this is where I fall on that. When they announced Toy Story 4, I was part of the, oh man, but 3 was such a good ending. And I think part of that is based on when I grew up and when 3 came out. It was perfect for me specifically.
Yeah, it came out when we graduated high school, and Andy was graduating high school.
Andy went to college when I went to college, and I was like, don't ever make another Toy Story. This is perfect. But Toy Story 4 came out, and I didn't love it, but I did like it. And I feel like the fact that I really loved 3 and then 4 came out and I just kind of liked it made me like, ah, man, I really wanted to love it like 3. But then 5 came out, and my expectations were like, okay, you know, I'll probably like it, whatever. And then I really, really liked it. So I'm glad we got 5 of them.
I love Toy Story 4 because it actually reminds me of a childhood incident that I actually had. I lost my Woody doll. I never found him again. I don't know what happened to him.
Dang.
So when the movie ends with Woody being just a lost, him deciding to be a lost toy, I was like, is that what happened to my Woody? Yeah.
He's out there with Bo Peep.
You know what? And that's what I would want for Woody. That's my desire. I'm a Woody fangirl. I'm a big Woody fangirl. I've always loved Woody more than I've ever loved Buzz. My brother was a big Buzz guy. My parents bought him like every Buzz Lightyear toy that came out. Every new one that there was, my brother had the newest one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And also, so for this movie to be mostly about Jesse, I actually really liked that they made that story pivot.
Love that. Yeah.
Even though like it was really weird, because I was like, oh, it felt odd for a Toy Story movie to not be about Woody and Buzz so much as the last four have been. But they did such a good job with Jesse, and Jesse has been such a great supporting character since Toy Story 2 that it was nice. Like, legitimately, when the movie starts and we hear the first notes of When She Loved Me, I was like, yo, y'all not finna get me right now when the movie's just starting. What are we doing?
They're like, we're starting early, bro. But yeah, I do love that it's Jesse's story, especially because a lot of people were not happy with how they felt Jesse was sidelined in 4. So for her to come back and be basically the protagonist of this movie and do it well. Yeah, and I feel like Woody is good in this movie as the supporting character that he is. Like, he's off there. When she needs him, he comes back. Buzz is doing his whole, like, Kristoff from Frozen 2 thing that he's got going on. But this is Jesse's story. And I think telling this story of we're afraid we're going to be abandoned because we're being left behind is perfect for Jesse specifically. We've established her abandonment issues when she first got introduced. So who better to lead this story than Jesse?
Yeah. I also really like the way that they introduce tech into the movie. Like, this idea that for the toys, it's very apocalyptic. Like, this is the end of the world to them. And the movie plays it like that. They're like, guys, the sky is falling. Like,
exactly.
Tech has come to take over everything. We're all going to die. And this is the
end. The devices are here.
The devices are here. Kids aren't playing anymore. Oh, gosh. And it was also really funny because it did feel very real to life of like how people talk about kids nowadays. And like,
yeah, you hear older people like, the kids never go outside. Oh, my God. They're never going to meet anybody.
They always on them phones.
Always on them phones.
Bro, like, you kind of caused that because you were just giving the screen to the kid to like calm them down. So like now what you upset because they don't want to go outside and play because you gave them the screen? What you mean?
I do like Bonnie's parents a lot in this movie, because aside from the fact that like Lily Pad is doing things,
I felt like they needed more restrictions.
So for me, it's Lily Pad is doing things that borders on like Megan and Skynet, like the talking to other devices without Bonnie actually being there for it,
yes,
is scary. But I do think that, like, all of the parents' motivations, they're apprehensive to give her the screen in the first place, but they see she needs a way to connect to people. And as much as old people hate this, I'm sorry, this is how people connect to each other. Like, I mean, you have friends in different countries. Like, this is how people connect to each other in the present day. You can still meet your friends and play with them outside. But if every kid in our neighborhood is on this, the pond or whatever they call it, that might be where she needs to meet her friends.
Yeah, I liked the balance that this movie had about tech. I liked that the parents were apprehensive. I liked that they saw that, well, maybe to start connection, we need her to have the device. I like that they also do make mistakes along the way of how to figure out how do you parent with a device. They do try and give her screen time. They do try to make it so that this is a tool for her to connect and play with other kids in the neighborhood because she doesn't have friends and she really wants to have friends. What parent would ever deny their child the opportunity to make friends if they feel that it's not going to harm them?
Right.
The mistakes that they make are innocent mistakes, to be fair. Like, there's no way I'd be letting my kid chat with other kids alone in a group chat. Like, not at that age. She's like 8.
Like, she's very young.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. Like, there's no way my parents should have been allowing me to be in chat rooms at like 14. Like,
right. But also, I like that once that does go south and Bonnie's mom is aware of it, she's like, okay, we're going to get off this for a while. Let's go get some ice cream. No more group chat. I see it's affecting you. And that's one thing is that people in lots of scenarios, they think that as soon as a kid gets upset, the parent has this sense of like, I know my kid's upset and I know why it happened and I'm going to address it right now. And it's like, sometimes kids feel things and they don't always open up to their parents for whatever reason. So Bonnie is kind of shutting down and like she's keeping to herself about what's going on. When she emotes in a way that is noticeable to her mom, she's immediately like, yo, what's wrong? Oh, okay, I see the problem. Put that away. And it's like, yeah, she saw the problem when she saw it and she immediately addressed it. It wasn't like, ah, whatever, just figure it out with the tablet.
I also liked that the movie wasn't like, oh, devices are bad, tech is back, we must go back to like analog ways, which, to be fair, I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little bit on the side of we need to pull a little bit back towards the analog. I buy all my physical media. I own vinyl now. I buy DVDs all the time and have been for years. I own CDs. I prefer buying books. I love physical media. But I do believe, and I think this movie's message is similar to what I believe, is that tech is valuable and tech is a great tool. And what it is meant for is that it is an initiator and it can help your connective tissue, but you can't always use it as the connective tissue. It cannot be the sole thing that is keeping you attached to the rest of the world, because more attachment to it actually makes you even more detached from everybody else around.
Yeah, like you can use it. It can't, like you said, basically. I don't need to restate what you just said. But yeah, you got it.
Like, it was great for Bonnie to initiate friendships with.
Right.
But then after that, you've got to do the work without the tablet, without the screen.
Right, which is where we end up when she does make the right friend. It's initially with the tablet. And I also like, because it's not taking that just all tech is bad, oh my god, the screens, the kids are gonna be terrible because of the screens, we get a character that is not just ha ha ha, I'm evil, I'm gonna take over. When we understand Lily's motivations, it makes sense from her perspective what she's doing, just like it makes sense from Jesse's perspective what she's doing. And I can't, you know, I don't want to spoil the whole movie, but I do think that when we see like where Lily's coming from, it's like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. It would be weird if this thing just came in and it was like
Skynet.
Like, like, what? Why? But speaking of the tech there, I do love how this movie is modernized. I do like that Toy Story is a franchise that goes from 95 to now. And like, we got back then, we were getting the Army Men and Battleship and Combat Carl. And now we have tablets and devices, and that still comes with the implications that it came with as a toy. Like, oh, what does this mean for toys' life? But the fact that Lily is a tablet that can be activated in a similar way to Siri has some implications, and we get to see them, and they're horrifying when you think about it. It's on some, like, Imperius Curse type stuff.
Speaking of the evolution of Toy Story, like with the times, like the animation has also gotten so much better.
Yeah.
Like the opening shot started and I was like, am I sure this isn't a live action movie? Am I in the right theater? What? Why is that a real palm tree? What is
it looks so
happening?
Good.
Yeah. If you compare the Toy Story animation to Toy Story 5, it's actually insane how much we have evolved like animation in this time period.
Yeah. Humans looked nightmarish in the first Toy Story.
Yeah. Everything looks so good. It's an amazingly animated film. So for me, Toy Story is 5 for 5 on great movies, which I think is miraculous, because what series do you know is got a perfect score?
That's tough.
I think really what Toy Story benefits from is the fact that I think people think that it's a cash grab whenever they decide to make a new Toy Story movie, but every single time I finish watching one, I'm like, nah, somebody really had something to say, and they were like, yo, let's make another Toy Story movie.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was about to bring up the cash grab claims. And first, guys, it's been 30 years, and this is movie number 5. If they were going for cash grabs, it wouldn't take 30 years for
them
to get...
We'd be on, Toy Story 10.
Right. Like, you think they're going to be that patient with a cash grab? And if you watch the movie, there's no way to come out of this movie without knowing that it's saying something important and that it's addressing things. Even if it wasn't saying something important for real life, which it is, it's important for the characters. Like, this is a story arc that started with Jesse in 1999 when Toy Story 2 came out. And now we're getting the culmination of her, not culmination, but a good payoff for her feelings of abandonment in 2026. Like, there's nothing about this that says cash grab, except for the fact that it makes a lot of money because
it's Toy Story.
People like Toy Story because it's good. So
listen, Toy Story ain't never let me down. So as long as they're making them and I haven't been let down, I'm going to keep trusting them to make a new Toy Story movie.
Yeah, 5-0. Because even as someone who doesn't love Toy Story 4, I've never seen a Toy Story movie I didn't like. They're still undefeated.
They are so undefeated. I would say that this is probably my least favorite Toy Story, but that's really not saying much, seeing as I just told y'all that the first four are in my top 5 all-time Pixar movies.
Right. So it's it will be hard for this not to be your least favorite if the
first
four
are
all.
It's my least favorite because it's just below the other one by a paper thin amount. Oh my goodness.
Also, before we move on, I do want to say... shout out to whoever decided to cast Greta Lee as Lily, because she plays Lila in Spider-Verse. So her going from Miguel's AI in Spider-Verse to Lily Pad in Toy Story is just so great to me. Great casting.
Isn't she also in Tron 3?
Is she in Tron 3? I didn't see that one. It'd be an interesting way to get typecast.
Yeah. She's in Tron. Tron Ares. She's not a robot. But she works with the robots.
Yeah. A lot of tech movies for her.
She knows what she's about.
She knows what she's about. I love that. But yeah, good movie. Very much enjoyed it. Shout out to Conan O'Brien. He was hilarious as a potty training toy that for some reason is able to send messages and connect to Wi-Fi.
Crazy work.
Yeah, what kind of toy is that?
I like the upgraded buzzes too. There's a lot in this movie that I really like. There's so much. We could spend hours probably talking about. To be fair, I probably could spend hours talking about every single thing that we're talking about today, just for different reasons.
That makes sense.
I could have talked about the Supergirl movie for hours for all sorts of reasons. I could talk about this movie for hours for all sorts of reasons, but we don't have time for that. And neither do you.
No.
Oh, man. The next thing on the list is The Legend of Vox Machina, which is created by and starring Critical Role, which consists of Laura Bailey, Taliesin Jaffe, Ashley Johnson, Matthew Mercer, Liam O'Brien, Marisha Ray, Sam Riegel, and Travis Willingham. The show also stars Wayne Brady, being introduced this season as Tarion Darrington. It also features the voices of Gray Delisle, Stephanie Beatrice, Indira Varma, Sarah Rodriguez, Mindy Sterling, Henry Winkler, Esme Creed Miles, Andy Serkis, and so many more. And the IMDb summary is, I'm using their original IMDb summary because the current one just only covers season 2 and 3. But the first season summary was, they're rowdy, they're ragtag, they're misfits turned mercenaries for hire. Vox Machina is more interested in easy money and cheap ale than actually protecting the realm. But when the kingdom is threatened by evil, this boisterous crew realizes that they are the only ones capable of restoring justice. What began as a simple payday is now the origin story behind Exandria's newest heroes. Which I feel like covers the whole story, I guess. We come back to this season, Vox Machina has been separated for a year. Vax and Keyleth have been doing Keyless Aramente so that she can become the voice of the Tempest, which means that they have been traveling the world. Vex and Percy are living lives as noblemen in Whitestone. And Grog and Pike are kind of just roaming around aimlessly with nothing to do. And Scanlan is touring the world as a musician.
Nice.
Using the stories of Vox Machina to create songs and tell stories around the continent. With his daughter. He's out there being a dad because he's been a deadbeat for her whole life. So now he's trying to be a good father.
Good for him.
We love to see it, don't we?
We love to see it.
So the thing is, though, Scanlan is not in much of the season because Scanlan is away from them for so much. But the world comes into danger when a new cult group starts appearing and causing mayhem and havoc and all sorts of things that connects to something that we were introduced to in season one. The Legend of Vox Machina is, in my opinion, probably the best fantasy show that is on television right now. Ha. Well, The Mighty Nine is also out now, too. So The Legend of Vox Machina and The Mighty Nine, like the Critical Role team is putting out the best fantasy TV that is out right now.
I wanted to ask you, is The Mighty Nine in the same universe or just by the same people?
Same universe. That show takes place 30 years after The Legend of Vox Machina. Okay. So by the time The Mighty Nine happens, Legend of Vox Machina has already occurred and Vox Machina is already legendary heroes and stuff like that. And then comes Mighty Nine. Yeah, this season was great. Animation still on 10. Their animation is always on 10 and it makes me so happy. I love their animation. Their fight scenes are so good. There is an episode this season which I am already claiming to be my favorite Avatar The Last Airbender content that will release this year. Yes, I am aware that the live action Avatar The Last Airbender is out right now. Yes, I'm aware that there is going to be an Avatar The Last Airbender movie that comes out later this year. I don't think either of them will be better than Keyleth's ritual to becoming the voice of the Tempest. It looks so cool. She's so cool. That episode is so good. And the episode before it where she finally passes her Aramente, sickening. Every episode this season is so good. Like if you look at my serialized, like every episode is either a 4, a 4.5, or a 5.
Okay, nice.
Never drops in quality. I don't think The Legend of Vox Machina has ever had a 3 or 3.5 episode. Like never, not once. But it's a really good season. I also think it's a really good setup for next season without feeling like, oh, we're just doing setup. It feels like, you know, people are growing, people have arcs, people have gone through things that we have to confront. I think Pike has a very interesting storyline this season. I know that in the original campaign that this is based off of, Ashley Johnson wasn't really available as often as she would have liked to have been to play. Okay. So she's not in a lot of the story for campaign one because she was working on Blindspot at the time.
Okay.
So they've had to like readjust Pike's storyline throughout the entirety of the series. And with that adjustment comes adjusting the entire show storyline. Also, there are certain things like that they can't use due to like copyright and trademark laws and stuff like that. So they have to like make their own sort of original thing, which is how the villain of this season kind of comes about a little differently, I think, than he does in the campaign. I love Vax and Keyleth's love, and I love the way that the show kind of seems to be like very subtly setting up for the story that happened in campaign 3. I feel like if you watch the show and you don't know anything about campaign 3, it still flows like this is just part of the story. We're just telling this story. But if you know campaign 3, it's like, oh, we're really starting to dive into like the roles of gods and how they impact the lives of mortals and like the roles that both of these types of things play into the universe. Are the gods good beings? Are they bad beings? Are they morally gray beings? Are they actually like merciful and beneficial for us to have? Like we're really diving into those types of questions. And that was a big part of campaign 3, which I hope is going to be an animated series. They bring in one of my favorite characters from campaign 3 into this season of the animated show, which I did not expect. I fully thought I would have to wait until they made an animated show to see this character, and they fully like changed some of the plot lines from campaign 3 in order to bring her into this season of the animated show.
Oh, cool.
I saw just like one little snippet of what I know she looks like, and I nearly bursted into tears because I love that character so much. Campaign 3 was the first campaign that I fully watched of Critical Role. So like that campaign means a lot to me. That is like my heart. That team is my heart.
Okay, I get you.
So seeing her on screen, I was like, oh my gosh, maybe we'll actually get the third Critical Role show that will like really tie up everything that's ever happened in this like universe. So I'm really hopeful for another show based off of just all the things that they've done to kind of set up. That show could happen. We're doing a lot of setup without being very blatantly obvious that this is set up for something else. And I really like that. I like the way that they've done it too, especially in a world that we live in where like a lot of pop culture is setting up for something that's going to come down the line. And it sometimes feels very like blatant and like they're hitting you over the head with, hey, look at this, guys, this is gonna lead somewhere else.
Stay tuned everybody,
look at this. I think that what they do on the show is far more subtle, and I think it's far more interesting because Marisha Ray did an interview where she said one of the benefits of doing this show is being able to the things that they didn't know were happening while they were playing campaign one, but became revealed to them in later campaigns, they're able to include that into the television show because they're like, oh, we have a wider knowledge of what was happening in the world. Let's include that so that we can show people the consequences of these characters' actions, even if they didn't realize that these things were happening.
Okay.
So I think it's really good. Andy Serkis is great on this show. He's always great.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I knew exactly what kind of character he'd be playing, and I still didn't realize it was him when he started speaking. This is one of my favorite shows. I love it. The seasons are always really good. Stories are always really good. I honestly, in my opinion, think that Critical Role does some of the best storytelling that you could possibly find right now. I'm currently behind on campaign four by one episode, which means I have 6 hours of content that I need to catch up on now. Yo, I knew when I went to go see Supergirl, I was sacrificing because I was going to have to like catch up on Critical Role. I was not expecting it to be a 6 hour episode.
Because on Thursdays, right?
Yeah. Thursday nights is always really hard for me to be like, yeah, I'll do something on Thursday night. Because I'm like, oh, that's 4, 5, 6, 7 hours of Critical Role. 6 hours means something crazy happened on that episode. And I'm scared. Like, we already had a character death last week. I'm scared.
Oh, man.
But yeah, like, Critical Role, I think, does like some of the best storytelling that you could possibly find. And I think that even though they change story things on the television show, I think they make really good story changes that are still like, oh, this is still good. This is still interesting. This is still intriguing. And I think they do a great job with like putting their characters into very emotional places. Like, I feel like they're very much setting up, not even setting up, like Keyleth's disdain for the Matron of Ravens and what she's done to Vax. I think that they're setting that up really well, because if you've seen campaign three and who she is in campaign three, her disdain is so huge. And I think they're very much justifying it in the show right now, so that if we do get show number three, that it will be like very like obvious how we got to this point, instead of us being like, here we are like 30 or 50 years later, and why is this character acting like this? What happened in that time span? It's like, no, what happened? These are the seeds of what happens in the future.
Right.
They're magnificent at what they do. They're really good storytellers. Nice. So yeah, that's my review of The Legend of Vox Machina. One of my favorite shows of the year so far. One of my favorite shows just in general. One of my favorite animated shows. And it's so good. So good. I cannot speak enough about it. And part of me, like, Dallas, I always want to recommend it to you because you're such an animation guy. Like, you love animation, you love voice acting. And I think that this show has some of the best animation, some of the best voice work. I don't know how you are with like fantasy stuff, though. That's the thing. These shows are so good. And also, they're adult animation as well.
Yeah.
They're really good. They're so up there.
I tried Vox Machina a while ago. It wasn't my thing in the first few episodes. I've been thinking about trying Mighty Nein. I don't know if it's like tonally very different.
So I would try Mighty Nein, because Mighty Nein, it's so interesting, because when I think about Vox Machina and Mighty Nein, I think that they have the same comedic style and the same dramatic style, but they balance them differently. So I think Vox Machina has always been a little bit more humorous in a way than Mighty Nein, but it's gotten a little bit more dramatic since then, because like stakes have gotten bigger. We've had bigger threats. But I think Mighty Nein immediately starts off with drama. Like, we start with like political intrigue and stuff like that. Whereas Vox Machina kind of takes some time to get down into that. I'd watch the first episode of Mighty Nein and see what you think about that, about about that, because you don't actually need to see Vox Machina to understand what's going on in Mighty Nein.
That makes sense. Yeah, I might give that a shot, because like, I think part of the reason that it wasn't my thing was their comedic style isn't one that I really rock with. But I feel like if you're saying Mighty Nein leans more into their dramatic style, I could probably get into that.
Yeah. Also, Vox Machina's characters are, I think, a little bit more archetypical for like fantasy. So like, okay, they're great characters, but they are also very heavily based in like, here's the archetype of what this character is, and we build out from the archetype. Whereas the Mighty Nein characters are very much like, oh, we've already done a whole D&D campaign, so we understand better how this game works. Now we really get to play around with our characters and create something new and fresh.
Interesting.
So.
Okay. Could be cool.
Highly recommend. Yeah. Try Mighty Nein and see what you think. Because while it is humorous at times, I think they don't play on the humor as much as Vox Machina does.
Okay. We shall see.
But yeah, that's my review. I love this universe. The universe of Exandria is fantastic, and I highly recommend. Please watch. It's so good. I think it has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like every season.
Impressive. So,
yeah, very impressive. It like I said, I think it's the best fantasy show on television right now.
Nice. I do love me some animation and voice acting.
That's all the stuff we have to review today, because we've been going for a minute. I did promise a Mando and Grogu review for the next time I was here.
Oh, yeah. That was a while ago.
Yeah, it's been a while. Sorry, guys. It's been a while. It's been a month, actually, since that movie came out.
Yeah.
So, quick review. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun. I think that they did a good job continuing from the TV show. It's very much a one-off adventure, though, that I feel doesn't really connect to the rest of the TV series, so you don't actually have to watch the entire show to kind of understand what's going on this movie.
Yeah.
I do think that they don't do... So, one of the things that I love about Star Wars is very mythological. It's very archetypal as well. George Lucas was very into Campbellian, the way Joseph Campbell like sets up his stories and the symbolism and the archetypes. That was very much George Lucas's bag. And Star Wars is very like deeply like tied into that as a story. And I feel like The Mandalorian and Grogu doesn't tie into that type of mythology as deeply as I would like, because that's my bread and butter when it comes to Star Wars as well. However, there is a segment in the movie where I do feel like they really like... dove into that, and that might be my favorite segment of the movie. However, it is the segment of the movie that slows the whole movie down. So that's my favorite part of the movie. But I think that the movie's really fun. It's really enjoyable. It's a nice little space adventure, and I look forward to seeing what Star Wars does with Starfighter next year. But I think this movie does very much feel like, I think Jon Favreau has always said part of his writing process with this show is it's kind of like taking your favorite Star Wars action figures and like mashing them together and making them fight. And that's kind of what this movie feels like to me. I did enjoy Jeremy Allen White in this movie, though. Very good.
Yo, shout out Rada.
Yeah, Rada was great. Rada was amazing. Rada was cool. Ludwig Göransson killed on the score. One of the best scores.
My favorite part. I actually did enjoy this movie as well. And as someone who has seen a lot of Star Wars movies, but not a lot of the shows and like other material, yeah, I wasn't super lost. But yeah, when Rada shows up, one, because I like the character, and two, because of Ludwig's score when we first meet Rada, I was like, yo, this is fire.
It's so good. I like that Ludwig pushes the boundaries of like what Star Wars music can be. He constantly does it every time he does something with The Mandalorian, and just doing the movie gave him more. I was like, what do you mean we got club music in The Mandalorian? Let's get it. Let's go. What are we doing?
When they get to the hood, I'm like, oh, this music is fire. Okay.
I was like, this slaps. What are we talking about? What are we doing? Not the score hitting right now. But yeah, the movie overall is good. It's very entertaining. I think it's very enjoyable. It's middle of the pack Star Wars movie for me, but also like my Star Wars ranking is probably a hot take and crazy, but also my all-time favorite Star Wars movie is the original movie. So it's very hard to like beat, let's be honest here. I like my OGs very, very much. Yeah, that's my thoughts on The Mandalorian and Grogu. And if it stays on my top 10 favorite movies of the year's list, you guys will hear more about my thoughts when we get to that point.
Nice. Okay, so first question. Do you want to do what you're watching and anything?
I'm going to be honest. That would be my what you're watching if we're going to be
okay, that makes
honest.
Sense.
Yeah.
Cool. My what you're watching is I rewatched X-Men 97 Season 1. It's still amazing. It's still one of the best things I've ever seen. Goblin Queen is still...
Ugh. Man. I know she fine.
Yeah, oh my God, I love it so much. Such a great show. But yeah, I rewatched it. It's still amazing. Everything about it is great.
I got to do my rewatch before season two comes back. We're a few days out.
You got a few days. By the time this comes out, it'll probably be about to hit.
I know.
Anything in the news you're excited about?
Not really. Hollywood news has been very depressing lately. I'm very excited for How to Rob a Bank, though. When that trailer dropped, I was like, that looks really fun. I'm really excited for that one.
That looks fire.
And I already got my ticket for The Odyssey. So.
Oh, nice. I was listening to our most anticipated episode because I finally wrote my longer Obsession review on my blog like a month after the movie came out. And I wanted to hear when Cassie introduced us to Obsession because I had never heard of it. And it was around the same time I was talking about How to Rob a Bank. And you were like, what are you talking about? What is this movie? I was like, Stanley Leach and everybody in it. And then we see the trailer and I'm like, yes, looks like exactly what I want.
Yeah, it looks really good. It looks like a lot of fun. This might, I don't know. It could become one of my favorite David Leitch movies for sure.
I can see that. I love me some David Leitch. Yeah, for me, it's also X-Men 97. It's coming out on the 1st. I am super excited.
Oh, that's
excited.
True. That's so true. We're super close.
Yeah.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I watched the trailer again. I know Lenore Zahn is going to try again to get tears out of me. We just see some cool things. Archangel's there. Psylocke is there. Jean makes a projection of Wolverine's claws on her hands and puts them in front of Cyclops' face so he can magnify his beams. And I was like, oh my God, they're still killing it.
The animation just, they be coming up with the coolest like team combos on that show. It's insane.
It's so dope. So dope. We're in the Savage Lands. I saw a dinosaur. Morph turns into Deadpool. I'm like, okay, y'all made this for me. Thank you.
I'm very excited. Super stoked for that show to come back. This could be the year that, like, I think animated shows have been my favorite show, like my top number one favorite shows for like the last few years now. But like, this could be the year that like animation just takes like the entire top three.
Love that. Love it. Love it. Love it. And lastly, we're going to speed through some comments because we actually have comments for once.
What?
So, different opinions, taking it to YouTube. All of our comments are about the Backrooms. Which is
cool.
Yeah. So we posted our short from our podcast about the Backrooms when I said that Chiwetel's name is too black for him to be acting this white.
Yep.
And we have a comment from Shantae Roxanne who says, facts with like 10 A's. So Shantae agrees. Which makes sense. With a name like Shantae Roxanne, you probably also agree that Chiwetel is acting too white in that movie. Someone named Ryan D said, he doesn't have friends to hang out with. LOL. That's why he keeps going back.
Oh, Lord.
Which,
everybody, this
the movie.
Is why you gotta make friends.
You gotta make friends. You can't just be having your store employees go into the back rooms with you.
There's no way Dallas would ever allow me to go into like some store back room.
No.
Even
no.
if I tried like, to convince him to come with me, he'd be like, we're not doing that.
Let's not do that. Let's not do that. And a comment from BitCrip Boy says, it shows how insane he already is from the beginning. Which, I see what you're saying. I do think the movie definitely takes a... Never mind, I'm not going to get into plot points of the Backrooms, but I see what you're saying. And then we have a comment on our TikTok about the Backrooms.
Oh my gosh.
From Blasian Wonder 9. Love the name. And the comment is, the most unrealistic part of the movie, which I'm guessing they're saying him acting like a white man is the most unrealistic part of the movie.
I haven't seen it, so I can't comment.
He should have been acting like that. That's the consensus. It seems like we're all on board with Chiwetel should have been acting like that.
Real.
But yeah, we did it.
Woo!
That is today's episode. Thank you, audience, for listening to all of that. Thanks for coming back. As always, thank you, Brandon and Aya, for putting us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Jimmy, thank you for editing and putting us on YouTube and being the other D in Double D Podcast.
Hey.
Yeah. As always, you can reach us in the comments. You can hit us on Instagram and Tumblr at Creative Differences Podcast, Facebook.com/CreativeDifferencesPC, or TikTok at Creative Differences Pod. Write a comment. We'll read it on the podcast, probably. If you want to talk to me more about X-Men 97 and how amazing it is, because that's all I want to talk about right now, find me on Instagram, Letterboxd, or Serialized at A King Named Simba.
Hey, guys, if you guys want to talk to me about how incredible Millie Alcock is in everything that she's in, I'm talking Upright, I'm talking House of the Dragon, I'm talking Supergirl, you guys can comment on either my Letterboxd or my Serialized reviews. And I am at Demi Joua. Joua is spelled J-O-I-E. Thanks again for joining us.
Yeah. I wonder, like, at some point, you're going to say something like that, and then you're going to make, like, a letterbox review for something completely unrelated, and they're going to be like, I also think Millie Alcock is great.
And you know what? I'll be like, Facts, bro. Not the right review for this, but facts.
Right, you're right.
You're right.
Yes.
Tune in next time, guys. I feel like the next time you guys will hear from us is probably when the Odyssey comes out. I don't know if there's anything.
I hope to review The Bear and
Will that
Strong.
Be done by the time the Odyssey comes out?
Bear comes out all at once.
Oh, did The Bear come out? Oh, I thought it was week by week.
Nah, Bears, they drop it, which it came out.
Yeah, like
Friday?
The other day. Yeah.
Saturday? Yeah, so I'm trying to finish it by the time we record again. And then,
dang.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to power through it. If not, maybe we'll see. When does Odyssey come out?
July 17th.
Okay.
Also, so we'll Moana see. Comes out July 10th, so.
Moana does come out July 10th.
Yeah.
Something's gonna happen. We'll see y'all sometime in the next few weeks.
For sure.
In the meantime, if you want to talk to Cassie, she's on Blue Sky at Lobo Lover, because Lobo is Spanish for wolf. And if you know Cassie, you know why she chose that name. We love alliteration.
Fitting, actually.
Right? Gabby's on Blue Sky at Goblin Queen, but Goblin is spelled G-O-B-B-L-I-N.
I feel like you used this one when we actually reviewed X-Men 97.
I'm trying to remember. So I was like, this sounds so familiar to me. But
and it
I
feels
looked...
like that's just a callback, and I like that.
It might be a callback. I think I went back to our X-Men 97, and I used something else. Yes, I did. Okay, so that was the same time we talked about If.
Yes.
And I used Imaginary Friend with Benefits.
Oh.
But we've talked about X-Men 97 so many times that there was probably another time when I did use this. Because I was like, it sounds very familiar.
It sounds so familiar.
Yeah, that adds to the continuity of it being her actual Blue Sky name.
Keep looking, guys.
Yeah, that's the kayfabe. All right. It has been different. Bye.
Bye.
So, question for you to me.
Yeah.
It is not a Pixar movie, but... Okay. Given his track record, do you think Brad Bird's upcoming movie, Ray Gun, will have a hot mom in it? Let me finish the question.
I knew where that was going.
I love that you knew where that was going. And I love that we're on the same page. I also think it will have a hot mom. Brad Bird, we know how you get down.
Although, she might not be a mom. I guess we'll find out.
Ain't gotta be.